Okay, so we need a couple folks. This chapter, a couple volunteers, Ryan, and who else wants to read tonight? Jack? Okay, so you can give it to Jack. Yeah.
In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me Daniel, after one that appeared to me the first time. I saw in the vision, and it so happened while I was looking, that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in the vision that it was by the river Ulai. And I lifted my eyes and saw, and there, standing beside the river, was a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand, for he did according to his will, and became great. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west, across the surface of the whole earth, without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. Therefore the male goat grew very great. But when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in place of it four notable ones came up toward the four winds of the heaven. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. Then he heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, "How long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot?" And he said to me, "For 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed."
Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, who called and said, "Gabriel, make this man understand the vision." So he came near where I stood. And when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, "Understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground. But he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, 'Look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at that appointed time the end shall be. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. The male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between his eyes is the first king. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, A king shall rise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of peace, prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. And the vision of the evenings and mornings, which was told, is true. Therefore seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterwards I arose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, and no one understood it.
Okay. Thank you. So Daniel, the book of Daniel is, as we've seen, one of the most interesting books because of the stories about Daniel and his friends, and even think of the Magi, the magicians of Babylon, which reappear in the story of Christmas when the Magi show up from Babylon. And also Daniel prophesied about the coming Messiah. But because of these prophecies, it becomes very interesting in this latter part of the book. Some of these were fulfilled in Daniel's day, and some were fulfilled afterwards, and some are yet to be fulfilled. So most of the predictions in chapter 8 are fulfilled between the time of Daniel and the coming of the Messiah. However, just as the other prophecies, there seems to be a near-far aspect to these prophecies. Sometime a prophecy will be about an event that's in the near future, but it portrays an event in the distant future. We have that in the prophecy of Isaiah 7:14 about the virgin. It's partially fulfilled in the birth of Isaac's son, but also there's a future fulfillment in the birth of Jesus, Matthew 1. So the setting of this vision was, first of all, in the third year of Belshazzar, and that's 2 years after the vision we saw last week in chapter 7, 12 years before the fall of Babylon to the Medes and the Persians. And we can understand that Daniel was upset after seeing this vision and having it interpreted because it affected the nation he was living in, Babylon. And he's seen that it was going to be destroyed, taken over, and also the nation that takes over, the Medes and Persians, is going to be also decimated by Greece. Shushan, in verse 2, it says, was by the river Ulai in near Shushan. And Shushan, or Susa, was the capital of ancient Elam, and later, during the time of Nehemiah and Esther, would become the capital of Persia. It was 200 miles east of Babylon. And so Daniel is probably transported in vision to Shushan next to the river Ulai, known today as the Karka River, flows from the mountains into the Tigris and passes near near Shushan, which is the modern city of Shush. The ram, he sees this ram in verse 3. Lifted my eyes and saw there stand beside the river was this ram. It had two horns. The two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Now we've seen these other pictures of these kingdoms that are coming. And in chapter 7, it was a bear, remember, that was raised up on one side, indicating that one part of this two-part kingdom was stronger than the other. And this is the same type of picture. The Medes were a powerful nation, and when they really succeeded was when they allied themselves with Persia, which was a smaller nation. And so Cyrus became the dominant figure in this two-part nation, the Medes and the Persians. It's actually the Persians that became stronger. And the Persians, interesting is that the Persians, when they went to war, the leader, the king, would wear a ram's head upon his head as he led his army into war. So the picture of a ram is really apt for this nation, just as the lion was for with two wings was for Daniel and the kingdom of Babylon. It says in verse 4 that it pushed to the west, the north, and the south. Now Persia is toward the east, and so his battles would be towards the west and the north and the south. This nation became great. In the time of Esther, it included 127 provinces and stretched from Ethiopia to India, including Israel, Asia Minor, Babylon, and modern Persia. The Persians were aggressive and sought to control more and more area. And the one country that they tried to possess, in which they attacked again and again, was the nation of Greece. And in 480 BC, when both his army and navy were decimated, it was after that Xerxes, who was the king of Persia, held the beauty contest to find a new king or a queen. So we have that story behind the story of Esther, because he was very disappointed that even though he had controlled most of the known world, he could not conquer Greece. And so Greece retaliates. And so we see that this description of a male goat in verse 5. Now remember, these things are prophetic. They had not yet occurred, even though the skeptics will say, well, this is history, it's not prophecy. And yet, there's ample evidence that Daniel lived in 600 BC and came from Israel. So these prophecies predated, and as he said, this was in the third year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. But notice the description of this goat. As I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole ground without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Now, what do you suppose the picture is here of a goat who runs and he doesn't touch the ground? Is he moving swiftly or slowly? It's almost like a cartoon you see with showing a fast-moving horse or something that doesn't touch the ground. It's moving so fast. And that's what Daniel saw. He saw this goat, and it had this notable horn, this great big oversized horn between his eyes. And he came, came to the ram that had two horns, which of course is Media Persia, which he had seen standing beside the river by the capital of Shushan, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram and moved with rage against him, attacked the ram and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, and he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. So we see this furious attack upon Media Persia, and we can understand that from Greece. And Alexander, one of the greatest men that has ever lived, the greatest soldier, greatest commander and leader in history, is this notable horn. And he came from the west, and his army was known for moving very quickly. Remember in chapter 7, verse 6, that the Greece was pictured as a leopard with wings. Again, showing his swiftness. And if an army can move swiftly, and this was one of his reasons that he could conquer so effectively with a smaller army, is that he knew how to move his troops in the right places, the right time. Much like General Patton in World War II, the Germans could figure out every tactic of the Allied commanders except for Patton. Patton would move his tanks. In fact, he stole fuel from the Allies in order to fuel his tanks so he could go. He'd drive them all night so he could surprise the enemy. Well, Alexander developed his army. He had what was called the phalanx, which was a huge army of soldiers. They were all in a square, and they had these long spears. And it was very hard for anyone to attack them because they would be protected on all from every angle. And then he would use his cavalry to attack the flanks of the enemies. And so it was a very effective way. But he was able to move quickly. And he was not known for his brutality. He had been trained by Plato and Aristotle in Greece. And there's some that believe one of the reasons he wanted to conquer was to extend Greek culture all over the world. He developed, actually, the Koine Greek in order for his army, for communication within his army, because we have all these soldiers from different parts of Greece, and they all spoke a different dialect of Greek. And so he developed Koine Greek, which is common Greek, which is what the New Testament was written in, so that he could communicate with all his army. Well, we can see that his fight with Persia was a grudge match. He wanted to punish Persia for their attacks on Greece. And so that is why he was so brutal in decimating the Medes and Persians, because of this. He wanted to make sure that they were punished for attacking Greece. But he didn't last long. Verse 8, it says, "Therefore the male goat grew very strong," or very great, "but when he became strong, and it was soon after he had conquered the then known world, the large horn was broken, and in place of it four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven." So in 323, just before his 33rd birthday, Alexander the Great died suddenly in Babylon from an illness which produced a high fever. It could have been COVID-19, but it would have been 319, not 2019. And he had no heirs. Two sons had died or were killed and had no named successor. The vast empire was left in disarray. After a period of time, four generals, and he talks here about four horns that rise up, four generals came to power, but never had the power it formerly did. This is from historyofmacedonia.org. "In Asia, the Macedonian commanders who served Alexander fought each other for power. Perdiccas and Melager were murdered. Antigonus, the one-eyed, rose to control most of Asia." So Antigonus wanted to take control of Alexander's empire. He was called One-Eyed because he had lost his eye in a battle, apparently. However, because of this, the other Macedonian generals made a coalition against him, and he was killed in battle, and the Macedonian Empire split into four main kingdoms. The one, Seleucus in Asia, Ptolemy in Egypt, Lysimachus in Thrace, and Antipater's son Cassander in Macedonia, including Greece. So just as Daniel predicts here, as we see, there are four horns, four kingdoms that arise out of that nation of Greece. The two powers which were the most interest to Israel were the Seleucids in the north, which was in Syria, and the Ptolemies in the south, which was in Egypt. And so they opposed each other. They had wars between the two, and Israel was stuck in the middle between the hammer and the anvil. And they took the brunt of these battles. Then one of these four kingdoms, we have another horn that grows from them. Verse 9, and out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land, which is, of course, Israel. Now, we saw a little horn in chapter 7, but that one came out of the ten horns, which is the last part of the revived Roman Empire in the Antichrist. This is another little horn, but this is a guy that lived, came out of the Seleucid Empire, whose name was Antigonus, or Antiochus Epiphanes. And he is also, the one out of the ten horns, remember, that's the Antichrist, or the first beast of Revelation 13. This horn comes out of Syria of the Grecian Empire, and his history is known as Antiochus Epiphanes, and he gave himself the name Epiphanes. He should have been Antiochus the Fourth, but he gave himself his name Epiphanes, which means God manifest. In other words, he was claiming to be God manifest in the flesh. Now, who does that sound like? So we call him the Old Testament Antichrist because he claims to be God and asks people to worship him as God. He came to power by bribing Rome. And we see this in, this is mentioned later in the chapter, verse 23, and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. Now, this is talking about the Antichrist here. But this is how Antiochus gained his power. He bribed Rome. And, of course, there's no bribery that goes on today, is there, in these countries between leaders? Or none of that corruption. I mean, this is something that's nothing new, is it? So he came to power by bribing Rome. He sent money to Rome. So he gained this position in his kingdom and grew great. And he ruled from 176 to 164 BC. So he had ambition toward the south, it says in verse 9. One of them came, little horn was succeeding great toward the south. That would be towards Egypt. Toward the east, that would be towards Persia. And towards the glorious land, that would be Israel. So he set his sights on these areas to conquer them. And that was his ambition and his atrocities. First of all, in verse 10, it says, and it grew up to the host of heaven, and cast down some of the hosts and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. Now, this speaks of believers, the Old Testament believers, sometimes called stars. They are in chapter 12. I didn't write down the verse, but they would shine as the stars. You'll have to look at it yourself, but that's what it refers to. It's toward the saints, these Old Testament saints. These are God's people, especially Jews. Oh, in chapter 12, verse 2, they're referred to as stars. And many of those who sleep in dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness firmament, those turn to many like to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. So he fights the people of God. He fights God in verse 11, Jesus Christ himself, the true Messiah.
He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And so he believes that he's greater than God. And he demands the worship that only God deserves. In verse 25, it says, he shall rise against the prince of princes. Of course, that obviously refers to Jesus himself. And he also attacks the temple. In verse 11, it says, he exalted himself as high as the prince of hosts. By him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of the sanctuary was cast down. Remember, at this time, the temple was not even standing. The temple had not been rebuilt. So this is much later, after Daniel has died, that this takes place. But what Antiochus did was he stopped the daily sacrifices and desecrated the temple. It says, in the act of brazen disrespect, Antiochus raided the temple in Jerusalem, stealing its treasures, setting up an altar to Zeus, sacrificing swine on the altar. When the Jews expressed their outrage over the profaning of the temple, Antiochus responded by slaughtering a great number of the Jews and selling others into slavery. He issued even more draconian decrees. Performing the rite of circumcision was punishable by death, and Jews everywhere were ordered to sacrifice to pagan gods and to eat pig flesh. Now, the Jewish response was to take up arms and to fight. And that was, if you've heard of the book of Maccabees, that's what that's about. 167 to 166 BC, Judas the Maccabeus led the Jews in a series of victories over the military forces of the Syrians and Greeks. After vanquishing Antiochus and the Seleucids, the Jews cleaned and restored the temple in 165. And so that's why the Maccabees are so revered to this day. And I believe they have a Jewish holiday for that. Anybody know what that is? Feast of Lights. I'm not sure about that, but you can look it up. Just need Google. Okay, but he also opposed the truth. In verse 12, it says, because of the transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices. He cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. In other words, he got away with it, but not really. That's what it seems today, doesn't it? That people blaspheme God. Truth is cast to the ground, and these people seem to last forever and ever, don't they? They never go away. Isaiah 59:14 says, justice is turned back, righteousness stands afar off, for truth has fallen in the streets, and equity cannot enter. Very similar to today, isn't it? 2 Thessalonians 2:10 through 12, speaking of the Antichrist, and it says, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. For this reason, God will send them a strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So reject the truth and you're going to be blinded. That's called judicial blindness or hardness. A person that turns and turns and turns from truth will become hardened to it, and they'll believe the lie, as they will in the case of Antichrist. And everyone has a witness of the true God in creation. Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows his handiwork. And if you look over at Isaiah chapter 6, we'll see this principle of blindness. We have Isaiah's commission in Isaiah 6, where he sees the Lord high and lifted up, and he is commissioned by God. In verse 8, it says, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send? Who will go for us?" And then I said, "Here am I, send me." And he said, "Go and tell this people. Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and return and be healed." Then he said, "Lord, how long?" And he answered, "Until the cities are laid waste without inhabitant, the houses are without a man, the land is utterly desolate." And of course, that happened. Isaiah prophesied 100 years before the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem, but he preached the word of God, and the people rejected and rejected and rejected it. They became dull. And the same was true in the New Testament when Jesus came. And that passage is quoted 6 times in the New Testament, including in Matthew 13. If you want to turn there, I can just read it. Matthew 13, verses 10 through 16. Jesus said this, "And the disciples came and said to him, Why do you speak to them in parables? He answered and said to them, Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. Whoever has, to him more will be given. He will have abundance, but he who does not have, even that will be taken away from him. Therefore speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, hearing they do not hear, and they do not understand. And to them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, Hearing they will you will hear, you shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive, for the hearts of the people have grown dull. Their eyes are hard of hearing, their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes have closed. They have that they should see their eyes and hear with their ears, that they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I would hear them or heal them." So we hear that this judicial blindness or hardness, the result of rejecting the truth that you have. So when you see people that say, "Well, I just need some miracle to happen," or, "If I lived in the days of Jesus and I saw Jesus, I would believe," don't believe them. They wouldn't have believed them then. Their hearts are hard. If they will not receive the testimony of the Word of God and the Spirit of God working in their heart, then they will not, doesn't matter what happened. If someone rose from the dead, which Jesus did, of course, they will not believe. They have the witness. They have the law and the prophets, as Abraham told the rich man. They need to believe them. Now, in verses 13 and 14, the vision now becomes interactive. We have an interactive dream. I don't know if you ever dream like that, where you're in a dream and you're having a conversation with someone. This is actually a vision. And so in verse 13, "Then I heard the Holy One speak, a Holy One speak, and another Holy One said to him," certain ones, one who was speaking, "How long will a vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host, the trampled underfoot? And he said to me, 'For 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed.'" So the conversation was for Daniel's for Daniel's sake. Daniel's able to eavesdrop on this angelic conversation. And where it says that the desolation will be limited to a certain period designated by God. As Wiersbe says here, verse 13 tells us that he will set up the transgression of desolation in the temple and defile the temple for 2,300 days. Now, a lot of preachers have taken this 2,300 days and some of the cults, and they've tried to figure out 2,300 years, where that would take you, but it's 2,300 days. Well, first of all, Wiersbe goes on to say, "Who was this man? History names him Antiochus Epiphanes, a wicked leader who came out of Syria, one of the four divisions of Alexander's empire. He invaded Palestine, set up a statue of Jupiter in the temple, And he even went so far as to sacrifice a pig on the Jewish altar and sprinkle its blood around the courts. Imagine how Orthodox Jews felt about this. History tells us the temple lay desolate until December 25th, 165 BC. So that would fit with Hanukkah, when the Jewish patriot Judas Maccabeus rededicated the temple and cleansed it. The total number of days between the desecration and dedication was 2,300. So there's been other explanations for that, but that seems to be the best one. But the important thing for us to see is that God knows what's going to happen in the future, and he's also in control of what is going to happen in the future. So Satan continues to work, but God continues to work and overrule Satan's work. Okay, then in verses 15 through 27, we have the angelic explanation of this vision. Verse 15, then it happened when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. This is Gabriel. Daniel needed divine illumination, as we all do. In verse 16, it says, and I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai who called and said, Gabriel, it's no light, it was probably God speaking here. Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. And, of course, Daniel's heart was soft. God wanted to instruct him. And so Gabriel will reveal that. And of course, today, that's what the Spirit of God does, doesn't he? He gives us understanding into his word. And also, when we give the gospel, we need that divine illumination, don't we? Because we can't make people understand or see or being brought under conviction. The Holy Spirit does that. It's the Holy Spirit who actually brings people to salvation. Now, we can be used by sharing the truth with them, but the Spirit of God takes the truth, applies to their heart, as Jesus promised in John 16:7 that he would convict the world of sin, righteousness, and judgment. And oftentimes you can see that Spirit working in their hearts, can't you, when you witness to someone, where you see the conviction or the enlightening. Sometimes you see them, their eyes lighten up like, I see it. It's like a light bulb went off. Well, that's the Spirit of God. So Gabriel clarifies this vision, verses 17 through 25. He says in verse 17, so he came near and I stood, and when he came I was afraid and fell on my face, said to me, understand, son man of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. So there's a dual purpose in this vision. There's a near far fulfillment. Now, as he was speaking with me, I had a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, look, I'm making known to you what shall happen in the latter time and the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. The ram which you saw, having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And the male goat and the kingdom of Greece, the large horn that is between his eyes, is the first king. So he's telling us that this is Alexander the Great. And as for the broken horn and the four that stood up in his place, four kingdoms shall rise out of that nation, but not with its power. In the latter time of their kingdoms, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. See, Satan is going to empower the Antichrist. He shall destroy fearfully. He shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. And the vision of the evenings and the mornings, which was told, is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. So he gives 11 facts about this coming ruler. First, he appears in the latter time of the kingdoms. Secondly, he appears when the transgressors come to the full. Just as in the days of Noah, the transgression is full. When God destroyed Canaan land, the cup of iniquity was full. It's coming. He will be a king of fierce countenance. He will have great power, but it's derived from another. He will be able to interpret riddles. He will accomplish great exploits. He will cause deceit to prosper. In other words, evil will increase. And we wonder why this world in our country, how they believe these lies, that these lies about marriage, that marriage can be between two men or two women, gender confusion. You can kill babies in the womb, and it's nothing wrong with it. I mean, these are lies, aren't they? These are lies from Satan. Well, it's because there's a satanic delusion today. And the Antichrist is going to use satanic delusion. He will exalt himself. By a false peace, he will destroy many. He will make a pact with Israel for 3.5 years and then break it. Or he'll make a 7-year pact and break it in the middle. And he also will raise up an abomination desolation. Now, we'll get to that in chapter 11. He will oppose the prince of princes, and he will be broken without human aid. We have that in chapter 7, verse 11, where it says, I watched. Then, because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking, I watched till a beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So he's going to prosper. It's going to be short-lived. Verse 25, at the end, it says, he shall be broken without human means. And then in chapter 11, verse 45, and he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. And finally, in Revelation chapter 19, chapter 19, verse 19, and I saw the beasts, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Then the beast was captured, with him the false prophet who worked signs in the presence by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire burning with brimstone. The rest were killed with a sword and proceeded from the mouth of him who sat on the horse, and all the birds were filled with their flesh. So the beast, the Antichrist, this little horn, is going to be exalted, but it's going to be a very short-lived rule, is it not? Very short-lived. And a missionary walked by, a man that was reading the Old Testament or the New Testament in Revelation. He says, What are you learning there? He says, we win. We win. And that's good to know, isn't it? Because we see truth falling to the ground today. It's being cast to the ground and rejected. So it's good to know that in the end, we win. And then finally, in the last verse here, it says, and I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for many days. Afterwards, I rose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. So even Daniel didn't fully understand, because these are things that were going to happen in the future. And of course, we can look back at the history of this and see that it was fulfilled exactly as Daniel predicted. Okay, we will take a few prayer requests. Pray for a fellow named Dean I met yesterday.